Oh, yeah. You get the blessing, Bob Belts and Bo Mitchell. One of the greatest groups ever formed, the Beatles. It's a happy song.
It is.
We don't know what it means.
That's right.
Wake up, folks.
Well, we got a great guest today too,
and the life does go on.
Yeah.
La la, how the life goes on, everybody.
So, in your extensive research on the Beatles, you've never figured out what obla-dee obla-da means.
Is it drug related?
I don't think so. I don't know.
I don't either. But
of course, in those days, probably for them, everything was drug related.
Folks, this is You Get the Blessing. We start every day with some squirrely, wonderful music that you probably haven't heard for a while, just trying to wake you up and have you stay tuned to the program. That's Bob Belts. He is the foremost authority on biblical knowledge and wisdom in the history of mankind.
Yes, right, right, Bo.
And I'm Bo Mitchell, who majored at Denver Seminary in total nonsense.
And you were good at it. You did well.
I've taken it to an art form, and I'm proud to have been a part of my own life. And we are two men in search of our minds. So you've tuned into the right program today. You get the blessing. Now, how do we bless you? Each week we introduce you to an individual that we interview, and as they share their lives, you will be blessed. So today our guest is Sterling Copeland. Sterling, welcome aboard.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate it, Bo and Bob.
How did we meet this guy, Bob?
Oh, well, I first met him in front of the church at Highline Community Church on a Sunday morning, and
that's
you
right.
were there with your girlfriend, still girlfriend. I don't know how to describe her. I don't know.
I don't
see any rings or anything. So anyway, Lindy.
Lindy.
And Sterling and Lindy were up front, and I think Lindy introduced me, or Jason introduced me to Sterling. So that's how I first met Sterling, and then we've had a lot of Promise Keepers time together, and he's a great guy.
Sterling.
Young guy.
How old are you?
I just turned 24 2 days ago.
24?
24 years young.
And he's already been a professional athlete and a blood-bought, Bible-packed, sin-hating Christian for a while. We're going to hear about these parts of his life. Where were you born and raised?
I was born in Corona, California. That's where all my family's lives in California. But I moved out here when I was pretty young. For my father worked with Promise Keepers and was a VP with the big national men's ministry Promise Keepers in the 90s. And so that's what brought us out to Colorado, and been here ever since.
And how did you hook up with Highline and Peter Tebow
man.
And Bob Belts and that whole group?
That is a great question. I it's kind of a twofold answer. I was a professional soccer player that was being told that the coach is leaving, and you're kind of in a purgatory of sports world. And I got told that there's this guy named Peter Tebow that might know a little about a professional athlete being brought in, coach leaving, and might have something to speak to that. So I thought, hey, this might be the only person that would understand what I'm going through. Twofold, and when I was working at Promise Keepers, I had a member of the Highline congregation, Steve Smith, actually said,
right.
You know, you should really check into what's going on here. I think it's pretty special, and I've been there ever since.
We think Steve Smith and his wife Lisa, by the way, are pretty darn special. They're like very unique, aren't they?
We took them out to dinner last weekend just to say thanks, because you know, in terms of what it means to be a servant, they are amazing. So
it's quite astounding to watch them in operation. Of course, she calls him Mr. Wonderful, which I think is very healthy for a marriage relationship to have your wife call you that. So, Sterling Copeland, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Tell us
about when faith first became real for you.
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I think for me, growing up, I kind of already said, I grew up in a Christian family, so that wasn't that was something, part of my testimony I'm so thankful for, and you can never really take for granted. But every person has to identify sometime in their life where it can't just be your parents' faith. It can't just be your parents' life. It's got to be something's got to click. For me, I went, I did the soccer thing here in Colorado, went to Faith Christian, was a All-American and at Faith Christian, and went to Oral Roberts University to continue playing soccer. It was not a major D1, but it was D1 nonetheless, and it was a Christian D1. So I said, sign me up. And what happened was when I went to Oral Roberts, I only gravitated towards the athletes. And I'm going to be bold to say how many people know out there that just because you go to a Christian school does not mean everybody around you is thinking the exact same thing you are or pursuing God every day. And that's, I found myself in a hole where I was doing the exact same thing. I got comfortable with the way I was raised. I got comfortable with my standing as a pretty neat athlete. And it took me, and probably the best thing that could have ever happened in my life, it took me getting injured in my first month of playing soccer. I was, you know, a starter from the very minute I came there, and I thought I was pretty special, pretty neat stuff. And I got injured, wasn't allowed to be on the travel team for over a month, my first season. And that's the time that I realized I had been investing my entire life, my entire college experience in things that were not pursuing God. A lot of pursuing my own pride, I think. And I realized it was almost like a veil completely came over, and I just really, for the first time, recognized how the depravity of where my heart was at. And so I ended up basically committing my life to God in that moment, recognizing that that's the only thing that's going to give that sustained bread of life. I think was really it, that soccer was not going to be sustainable.
So whether you're an athlete or a teacher or a minister or a scholar, there is no conflict between being God's man and being the best prepared, strongest, fastest, smartest in any of those professions. Mm-hmm. But when it gets out of balance, there is a conflict, and you're saying that's what you were feeling was was just out of whack.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely. I realized that the people around me were the best resources. The thought of going to a school where I have mandatory chapel, ergo a mandatory sermon where I get to get fed, and the thought of that being a negative is just, you know, I laugh about that now. And still I wish, you know, you say you wish you had known. I mean, I wish I would have soaked every minute of that up, and it took me a couple months to realize that that's what I needed to do. And it revolutionized the way that I looked at my athletics and my life, my school, my friendships.
So you finished school on a better, higher note spiritually and apparently athletically because you went to pro soccer.
Yeah. When I came back to Colorado after school, had such an incredible opportunity. There's so many doors that God opened, And within 2 months of being back home over the summer, the Colorado Rapids, the professional team here, the MLS soccer team in Colorado, asked me, you know what? Hey, we got a lot of injuries. We'd love if you came on and helped us. And it wasn't a trial. It was just, hey, we need some help. We have injuries. So I said, you know, obviously I wanted to step up, and I tell you what, God opened doors and gave me confidence that when you make that step to professional, there is a huge confidence issue. I think really blanked my mind. I stopped thinking about it and I just kind of went. And anybody who's been in an elevated athletics knows if you start thinking about it, when you start trying to correct stuff is when you start messing up more. So when I really just had a blank slate, and I ended up doing two trials, and they said, you know, hey, we'd actually kind of like to see you play against our team and see how you'd stack up. And I ended up scoring in the two games that I played against the Rapids, and they said, tell you what, we'll take you for the year. So so I was with the Colorado Rapids last year, and right after they won the MLS Cup, and we made it to the quarterfinals last year.
So what are your strengths as an athlete? Speed?
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, I
brains?
I appreciate this. Not many of the listeners would know this, but Bo mentioned the other day that he was wondering if I was the right person because I don't particularly look athletic. So I'd like to highlight
that. I didn't say that.
It's on the record. You can't take it back. So,
how tall are you?
So I'm 5'11". I'm going to say 6 foot on my ID, but I've always...
And what do you weigh?
I was 175 pounds when I was with them.
You don't particularly look athletic to me.
There it is
on the record. Let me say this. World-class athletic, but you are. So tell me your strengths.
I've never had a person... be faster than me in any team I've ever played on. Even when I got to the Rapids, I'm going to claim Marvell Wynn, Omar Cummings, they're probably going to not like this, but I think I was even faster than those guys, who are notably some of the fastest guys in the league. So I considered I was one of the fastest guys in the entire league. I'm 5'11", I can dunk a basketball. And if you see these hands of mine that can barely grip a tennis ball, you would understand that it takes a lot more work.
So not just fast, like 100 meter sprint fast, but fast laterally and quick,
right,
and all that stuff.
That's
is
right.
What goes into soccer.
Can jump out the roof. And I got I was blessed with actually being able to run long distance too. I did track and field, did long distance running. So I really had the athleticism of a soccer player. I tell you what, you put me next to a basketball player, a football player, you probably would see that that I don't quite match the same physical physique, we'll just say. So it really was. I was specifically geared to be exceptional at soccer, I think.
And who taught you? And how old were you when you learned your ball handling skills?
Oh, that's a good question. Now, it depends on who we're talking to. If you talk to my father, he's going to claim it. But my father was also the one that got me into it by reading an encyclopedia to learn what the rules were. So no soccer background in my family. It just my dad started coaching me because the kids wanted to. I think what was always special is I just started when I was 5. I really think that I never stopped playing for more than 2 months. In my entire life, 18 years leading to professional soccer, never took more than 2 months off my entire life.
Just did it over and
that's
over.
That's it.
You read the book Outliers?
Yes, actually I did.
So you had your 10,000 hours in.
That's it. I'd like to think so. I'm also going to make a bold claim here and say I'm an athlete, so I can't count that high, but...
now you've offended the other group of listeners that needed to be offended.
I put in the work, I guess you would say, and soccer is one of those unique sports, especially to Americans, where you kind of grow up throwing the baseball, you grow up shooting a basketball, throwing a football. That foot coordination is something that is not particularly American, we can say, that you don't grow up doing it. And so that's something that you really need to devote. It's a really challenging thing to start when you're in your teens or later. It's a very challenging thing to start later in life.
Is soccer the biggest sport in the world?
Oh, by miles, yeah.
By a long margin.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
yeah.
not that
it's yeah, it's
in
it's
America's.
A completely different world here. I mean, I've played in Germany, did trials in Europe, played in Brazil a little bit, and I mean, I've been everywhere, and you don't understand fanatics. You know, we're talking I think the Yankees, the Red Sox, you know, that comes to mind as, oh, that is the scariest rivalry in sports. And it just, I mean, it doesn't even pale in comparison to South American rivalries. I mean, going to England, I was at an English soccer game where the opposing fans were asked to sit in seats. They were given seats instead of standing room only. and they ripped the seats off and lit them on fire in the middle of a match that was banned.
Is that an issue, you think? My second game at CU, 1968 basketball, we went to Texas Tech, and they had little golf ball-sized plastic basketballs that the fans threw at us as we came on and off the court. And I thought, this is a little different than high school ball.
Yeah,
and Bob was a great tailback. He doesn't talk about it quite as much as I like to talk about the things I did in sports. But don't you think, guys, as adults now, that it's fun to remember that when we were young and supposed to be athletes, we were. And for me, it teaches or it taught me how to compete, which I think, again, don't you, Bob, is a good thing when you shift your focus and start competing for feeding people or giving people a place to sit when they go to church or for the souls of men and women.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be sports either, you know, because there's people that, you know, that's not the way they were wired or gifted, but seek to, you know, excel. Musicians that, again, you know, you were talking about the book Outliers, that, you know, that's just the thing that, you know, is pushes their buttons and they've excelled at it. So I do think those things carry over.
Academics. So.
Yes.
Do the same thing. Yes. But I like learning to compete. And Sterling, I like the fact that you're this humble guy in this humble package. And now we're going to put it in real context.
He did say he was the fastest guy in the world. So, you know,
he said
that
it with humility, though.
Yeah. Oh, with humility. Okay.
But I like the fact you competed at such a high level. Wow. And you really still are. You just kind of shifted your focuses again here.
That's right. That's right. So I tell you what, though, you should have seen the passion that I have to play soccer is something that I think when you mentioned competing, I think the passion is the way that I would like to look at it. That's the something that I think set me apart. I mean, I was so passionate just about the game to even a fault, to the point of, you know, okay, this person is a little bit too intense. And I think a way – just like you said, in school and vocation, to remedy passion with humility, with understanding that we're still under, you know, that we have to represent ourselves like Christ, and that's where passion can overstep, I think. And so that's a great thing that I had to learn over the years, and I think I struggled with a lot. Is, man, that's. He just flips a switch and he's a different person when he plays soccer. So that being able to remedy having passion, but being still a servant on the field is a very unique dichotomy, I think.
We had a meeting 3 weeks ago now at Bob's church, Highline Community Church, and he asked me to come share with his elders. And when I got
Sterling's church, by the way,
I attend that one.
So when I got in my car to leave the meeting, I called my wife and I said, I was terrible. I was so intense and loud and aggressive, and I don't know what was wrong with me. And she said, well, it's kind of a serious thing you're dealing with. And I'm like, so what? I don't have to be a complete nut.
Yeah.
And then Bob gave me another shot a week later, and I did better, didn't I?
Yes, you did much better.
So that is innocent.
And I've mercilessly harassed you about your previous performance.
You were right, and I'm wrong. I'm happy to admit when I'm wrong.
You were fine.
So now you're refocused, Amen. But let me ask you before we go on to Thrive and Promise Keepers. At age 24, still in there somewhere, and you might still get a call, and somebody might say, we need your speed and ball handling skills and passion on our soccer team. You still have that dream?
Oh, man. That's the one thing in my life that I feel that God had a plan and knew exactly what he was doing in my life, was saying the one thing that could take me away from professional athletics, professional soccer, was to go to serve him in the ministry. I really felt like God blessed me to be in the ministry and really, you know, that kind of God-ordained appointments. And I really feel that that's what's happening in my life. And so I'm just going to say I'm going to honor you through this. It's tough because, you know, I wasn't particularly the smartest player, had all these abilities. I literally am physically blessed. So I am still at the peak. And soccer players, they say, do not hit their peak till they're 28 because they're when athleticism meets intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so I'm 24 and still beyond athletic. It's just, you know, I really felt God said to honor the position that I'm in ministry. And if that lasts my entire athletic years, then I'm willing to submit to that.
Now, do you still train and work out?
I do.
And do you get to play, you know, for fun anywhere? Or?
Yeah, I do. We actually were just getting together our young adult group, Thrive. We're talking about making an indoor soccer team, co-ed, and then also a men's league team that I play on. So the level is very different, and I think that's actually helped me kind of realize how silly it is sometimes, how intense I've gotten in my life, to where now it's just, you know, it's fun. It's fun.
I just figured out why I was not a professional athlete, and that is that my athleticism and my intelligence never quite met.
You know, I've never heard that before.
That's good.
I'd like to know where you learned that about age 28, because I'm the same way. I quit professional baseball when I was 21, 22.
And that's
well, tell us a little bit about, let's talk about this next phase. So you transition and suddenly you find yourself doing.
Yeah. So what happened in my life, and this is why I say I believe I'm supposed to honor God with where I'm at, is in the middle of the preseason for this year, the new coach came in named Oscar Pareja, Colombian guy who said, basically, Sterling, I don't know you. I have a lot of guys that I want to bring in. You're not somebody that I was planning on bringing in. So I was released in March. Now, that's fine for some people. But in a lot of cases, you know, we're talking about this economy. For any person to lose their job, it's like, oh, man, you really feel for them. In my specific circumstance, and I want everybody to understand this, is I had two jobs. I had Promise Keepers, this incredible men's ministry, and I had professional soccer. And I had a good job and a better one, and I just didn't know which one was which. And God took me out of soccer, and within a week, Promise Keepers asked me to come on to help them for this conference season. And Promise Keepers is now, I'll talk about it a little bit more, but it's now improving and on the increase. Well, if I had played half of a season with Promise Keepers, or if I had played half a season with the Rapids and middle of the summer asked to switch my vocation, I can almost guarantee you I wouldn't be at Promise Keepers.
Well, we're glad you are, and the men you're ministering to and the staff you're ministering with, Raleigh Washington and his crew, I'm sure are blessed beyond belief. So what can people be praying for on your specific journey coming up?
I think just to for guidance. I think God just keeps throwing more and more opportunities in my life, and it becomes more and more just it becomes, I think, clarity for my life that God wants me to be in ministry. And so I just, I think that he just keeps pushing me with where I'm at.
Well, you're going to do great things, friend. And Bob's pretty astounding testimony and place where he has your church member here, Highline and
well,
Thrive.
You know, he's Sterling, had he never done anything other than existed and be who he is, would be a total delight anyway. So I see him a little differently and love him, and he's a great encourager and doing a great job with our young adults and part of the leadership team there. So,
are you thinking about growing a beard?
I tell you what, some people can't grow a beautiful beard like Bob Belts. Some people have to work on it for 24 years, and even then, yes, I'm still working on my first shaving. Thank you, Bo.
You look great, and you are great. So anything people should know about Thrive, how people could plug into it?
Tell them where you meet and time.
Yeah, great. Thrive is the young adult group that was started at Highline Community Church. That's right off of, I guess you'd say, Hampton and
Colorado
officially. It's a fantastic group. We meet on Friday nights, and it is starts at 6:30 officially. But this idea of breaking bread together, it's a very neat thing. You don't have to go to Highline. It's a young adults thing. It's not a church thing. It's young adults coming together to actually just engage in community.
What age?
Let's say we say really 18 to 40, 18 to 35 kind of thing. There's young singles, or there's young marrieds, there's singles, there's people in college, and even people just coming out of high school. So it's very open.
Peter Tebow speaks most of the time consistently when he's not there.
That's right.
You're up.
There's a group that kind of steps in that sometimes he asks some of seminary guys, sometimes he asks within the group. So it's always great. Worship, food, and a message. Can't get better than that.
That's Thrive on Friday nights, 6:30. Get a great meal, hear a great message, fed physically, fed spiritually, fed emotionally through the great spirit they have there. I've been there, and I was the oldest guy in the room by 50 years. No. So thanks for listening today. Sterling Copeland, wonderful guy, great guest.
Yeah, thanks for being on,
Thank
Sterling.
Thank you, guys.
Bob, we'll see you next week, and thanks for listening, folks.
Blessings. Thank you.